FM and
this
Federal
paid commercial
News Radio.
May not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been an exciting week. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
It was a giant mailbag
Yes.
last week. Huge, giant, that's the magic thing there.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
It bounced. It was sort of like a delayed bounce.
It was a delayed bounce. But Mr. Big Voice did finally get here by the time it bounced twice.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Led by Brain. She's a regular listener. Dear Doctor, I need a cure. I'm beginning to believe that my password management is inadequate. See, I know a lot of people whose password management is inadequate. I know people who, this is an aside, who never want to change their password every 3 months like they're supposed to.
One of those people.
They make all their passwords identical, and they are a walking password disaster waiting to happen.
You're sitting next to one of them.
Okay. So Led by Brain said, please name some of the best password management applications and a few free ones that do a good job. A little overview on this topic is much appreciated. Thanks, Led by Brain. Well, Led by Brain, online merchants and other supposedly secure websites really can't be relied upon to keep your personal information safe, as we know. I mean, we've just had so many data breaches have just been going throughout the entire industry. And even sites with decent security have been compromised by the Heartbleed bug that was discovered earlier this year. So if you use the same password on all these sites and one of them happens to be hacked, you're in trouble. So you really need to use a different password on every site. And if you really want to be safe, you should change the password often. And the password should be long and complex so it can't be cracked. That means that you probably want a password manager because it's just too much to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Now, PC Magazine recently reviewed password managers. There are like 24, 25 of them out there. They looked at 24 of them. 10 of them made the top list, and the three that were the editor's choice on PC Magazine are really quite good. I like them. LastPass 3.0 was one of them. Then they have LastPass Premium, which is like the paid version that was an editor's choice. And then they have Dashline 3. These are the three units. So let's talk about each of these.
Okay.
Now, LastPass 3.0 imports passwords from over 30 other password programs. So if you're already on a password program, you want to switch to LastPass, you can just import your passwords immediately. Now, if you're starting from scratch and you've let your browser remember all your passwords, you can import your passwords from your browser's cache, from your browser storage, from using either LastPass or Dashlane. And so LastPass 3, as well as Dashlane 3, they'll import the passwords, and then they'll delete them from the browser.
Hmm.
And then they'll turn off the browser's password management. I mean, that's actually pretty useful.
Yeah.
Now, all three of them support two-factor authentication. See, because now you've got one, and by the way, your passwords are stored on the cloud. So you can access them anywhere. You go to a friend's computer, your passwords are there. Now, that means you need two-factor authentication to protect the login. Now, that's what actually Apple needed for the iCloud.
This is like what banks use, right? When you put in your password and then they have that second that shows you maybe a picture or something?
Yeah, no, that's not quite two.
Okay.
A two-factor, that's sort of a quasi. That's like a factor and a half.
Okay.
See, like a two-factor would be, you log in with your password, and then it sends a code to your cell phone. And then you have to read the code from your cell phone and input that.
Ah.
So even if somebody has your password,
this is Comcast uses something like that, don't they?
They can't get in.
Like if you're trying to change your Comcast password, they will do that. They'll send you something to your phone, and then you have to enter that code into the website.
That's two-factor authorization, and that makes it much more difficult to steal your to hijack your account. Now they could send it to your cell phone. They could send you an email with your second factor. Some of them will actually allow the second factor to be a fingerprint scanner.
Huh.
So I'm actually thinking that they might let a fingerprint scan on, say, the iPhone suffice. So some of these units – so you definitely want to have two-factor authentication, and you want to put a very strong password on the – because now you've got one password that's protecting everything. And both LastPass and Dashlane have that. Now – you also want Dashlane and Passlane, LastPass, have another feature that's very nice. They detect if you change passwords. So suppose you're going to change your password. They'll detect it, and they'll store the new password automatically for you. So it's actually – and also, if you're, like, filling out a form, it will remember all the stuff that you fill in on the form. So the next time you want to – fill out a form, it will remember the data, and it will sort of help you automatically fill it out. It remembers all this data.
Mm-hmm.
And it will remember all kind of credentials that you might have, including driver's licenses, passport numbers, all sorts of other kinds of IDs. It's very convenient when you're filling out a form of personal data. So it's got more in it than just the password. Both of them have that. Now, the free edition of LastPass, this is LastPass 3.0, the free edition of LastPass has everything except for support of mobile devices. So if you want to support the mobile device, you want to be able to use the LastPass on the mobile device as well as on your computer, you have to pay $12 a year, a dollar a month. But if you're happy just using it for your computer, you don't need mobile support, the free version has everything. So that's actually quite a good deal.
Sure.
Now, Dashlane is free for a single device. So you could Dashlane 3, you could have it free for a mobile device or free for your computer. But if you want to sync multiple devices, you have to pay. You have to use the paid edition, and the LastPass Premium costs a dollar a month too. So those are actually both very good options, and they both have a free option as well as a paid option if you want to go. So that's LastPass 3 and Dashlane 3. And these things also give you – both of them will give you a security report where they'll analyze the strength of all your passwords. You'll rate your passwords. They'll also report any duplicate passwords so that you can get rid of all the duplicates. And so the nice thing is once you've got this system in place, you can change your passwords frequently, which is a good idea. It automatically remembers them, and I think it leads to a very good password management system, even for people who can't remember complicated passwords. So that was a great email from Led by a Brain. We got an email from Arnie in Crownsville, Maryland. Hi, Dr. Schertz. I'd like to know how Pulse Point works. It's a free app for anyone knowing CPR, and it's good for those it's good for firemen, it's good for EMT, firemen, police officers, and others to give assistance to people having heart attacks. Now, how does one getting this app get the signal that lets them know that there's somebody in the area that's getting a heart attack? How does it actually work? I'm kind of confused. Oh, and by the way, here's another article about Tor. This is the Onion router. This is a browser that allows you to surf the web anonymously, and they had a story here. They mentioned in this article about Tor, the godfather of anonymity, which is David Chom. And if we haven't reviewed him, you may want to do it in a future show. I looked at David Chom. He's an interesting guy. I think I'll use him on a future Profile in IT. So that was a great suggestion, Arnie. Now let's go back to this Pulse Point. I'll talk a little bit about Pulse Point because it is a great application. It's a location-aware phone application that allows everyday citizens to provide life assistance to people who have sudden cardiac arrests. So what happens is that notification is made simultaneously to dispatch the paramedics to someone who is having a problem, and then it notifies individuals through this application, individuals who are within walking distance of where the heart attack occurred,
uh-huh,
and who are willing to provide CPR, and it gives them a map location of how to get there. It also gives them a map location of where the nearest defibrillators are, these AED devices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been a lot of cases where people have really saved this has really saved people's lives. But the local jurisdiction has to sign up for it, because this application, which you can download for either an iPhone or for an Android phone, is synced to the local emergency dispatchers. And so what happens is that if a heart attack is reported in a public location, this will automatically see the location of anybody with that application within walking distance, and it sends them an alert, and there's a special tone. And there have just been cases where people could get there faster than the ambulance, mm-hmm, and it saved lives.
Wow.
So there are currently 500 cities in 17 states that are using it as of September 14th. I couldn't find any local jurisdictions using it, but we might check on that.
I was going to check on that right now.
Why don't you check on that? Now, the jurisdictions have to pay a licensing fee between $5,000 and $25,000, depending on their size. And it caps at $25,000 for the very largest of cities. But it is a great application of cell phone technology that actually could make a real difference. So that was a great letter, Arnie. And I sort of did like learning about that application. I'd never heard about it before, but it's a very nice location-specific application. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I'm a big fan of your program and listen regularly. I have a challenge and need some insights. I'm between jobs because I was laid off from my last business analyst position a few days ago. I've been contacted by a recruiter asking if I'm a certified Google Analytics person. Regrettably, I'm not. She said she had a wonderful job, but you have to do stuff for the employer, and they want a Google Analytics certification. I wanted to learn how much prep was required to realistically pass the certification exam. I've never used Google Analytics, and I need a realistic game plan on mastering this. I'm also looking at getting a Google AdWords certification. Thanks, Lauren. Well, here's the thing. There are some excellent online resources. So you can look up certified Google Analytics, or you can look up certified Google AdWords. And on the Google site themselves, they have a whole section with online courses. And it is really quite complete. And they've got videos and everything. I'll tell you, if you were going to do that, that's where I would go first. There's also an excellent blog that I found, veget.com, and it's I'll give you the full link to it. It's a fairly complicated link. And this guy just recently got a Google Analytics certification, and he went through all the process. Now, here's the key. If you're going to do any kind of certification, I just don't believe in, like, studying for the tests. You've got to actually apply it. So I would suggest that you set up your own web page, and you practice these concepts, because you have to put the code at the bottom of the page. You've got to register it with Google and go around and play around with it. So I've used a lot of Google Analytics, and I just taught myself by playing around with the web page and inserting stuff in there. And see, it could be a really simple web page. Now, if you have a friend that has a website, a personal website, and they don't mind, you know, letting you muck around with it, you could practice on theirs too, on their site too. But the process of actually applying the stuff is what's going to really lock the information in. So you have to apply the information.
Do you know CPR?
Yeah. I'm on the pulse board.
Yeah, so you just can't memorize a bunch of test questions. But I think this is a great area to get into, because Google AdWords and Google Analytics are used extensively as businesses try to optimize the traffic and the number of leads they're getting from their website. So it's a great, great thing to go for. That was a very nice letter, and best of luck with your new career search. And there we go. We love all your emails. Just email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you at the next show, or I even may send you a response directly.
If you're really special.
If you're really
but
special.
They're all, everyone's really
yes,
special.
Yes, that's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Saturday morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. You're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. And now it's time for
Profiles in IT.
And today we're going to talk about Vic Hayes. You ever heard
of Vic?
Didn't
he play football for the Browns?
No. Vic Hayes. He is father of Wi-Fi.
a man near and dear to your heart.
Oh, yeah, I love that. That's at Wireless Networking. Vic Hayes is Senior Research Fellow at Delft University of Technology in Delft, Netherlands. Now, he's actually a Dutch engineer. He didn't really invent the technology, but he steered the sector. He steered the standards so that all the companies would accept one universal standard, and he avoided the fight that we're all familiar with, VHS versus Beta, which actually almost killed the video recording industry in the beginning. And he now has what almost is a ubiquitous technology worldwide. Now, this term Wi-Fi, he actually set up something which is now known as the Wi-Fi Alliance. They wanted to name the technology. At that time, it was being managed by the 802.11 committee. So they thought, 802.11 is not really that sexy.
Oops. Hello.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Schertz, everybody. That wasn't us.
Oh, my God. Great. Let's move along now, shall we?
Yeah.
We're talking about Wi-Fi.
Okay, there's a little joke here that we're gonna let it.
Now, you know what? You keep talking, and I'm gonna move that way far away from you.
In 1999, this alliance hired a company called Interbrand to come up with a name for this new wireless networking technology. Now, this is the same consultancy firm that named the product Prozac. And so they came up with the term Wi-Fi as the proper name for this wireless networking technology. Wi-Fi, and it doesn't really stand for anything, but people later on started calling it like wired fidelity or something.
Or wireless fidelity.
Wireless fidelity. Now, yes. Other finalists in the name game, when they're trying to name Wi-Fi, were Torchlight and Elevate.
I think Wi-Fi is a good choice.
I think Wi-Fi was really pretty much it.
They made a good choice.
Yeah.
Now, Vic Hayes, he chaired the IEEE 8 Standards Committee, the 802.11 Committee, from the beginning. He was actually at the beginning of it. He chaired it for the first 10 years, and his leadership really brought us low-cost wireless networking. He was born July 31, 1941, in Indonesia, which at that time was called the Netherlands Indies.
Mm-hmm.
He received his Bachelor in Engineering degree in 1961 from HTS Amsterdam. He was a radio and radar officer in the Dutch Royal Air Force, and then he went to work for Fried & Holland, which is now Singer Business Machines. He worked there for about 9 years. Then he went to work for NCR Systems Lab in the Netherlands. Now, that company later became AT&T, and then it was later bought by Lucent, and then it was later bought by Agere Systems. So he ended up working ultimately for Agere Systems, and Agere was actually one of the major chip manufacturers for the Wi-Fi technology. But he made the standard so effective that there were so many companies who could actually manufacture the chips that Agere, in the end, lost out, and they got out of the Wi-Fi business. So he retired from Agere and went to work for the university.
So one of our questions that we always ask during Profiles in IT, did he get rich off of this?
No, he did not get rich out of it. But he certainly got a lot of satisfaction out of establishing a worldwide standard
for pay the bills. It's Saturday morning, and this is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2, online at techtalkonline.com and federalnewsradio.com.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. Nope, it's not Monty Hall. It's not Ed McMahon. It's not Dr. Richard Church. It's this guy right here.
And I would be that aforementioned guy right here. My name is Jim Ross. I'm the adjunct professor for messing things up and lowering the academic bar here on Tech Talk Radio. We just finished discussing Vic Hayes, also known as the father of Wi-Fi. Now, the term Wi-Fi was created by the consultant firm Interbrand that also coined the name for a very popular pharmaceutical. If you can tell me the name of that pharmaceutical, you will win today's pop quiz. And that will yield you two free tickets for fine dining at Stratford University, either on the campus in Falls Church at the Escafia at Stratford or in Woodbridge at Cafe Karim. But you need to pick up the phone now and dial us forthwith. If you're calling from west of Delft, Netherlands, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Indonesia, it's 877-936-9333. Or, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333. Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for crowd control and prize distribution, standing by now to take your calls on the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio.
This could only mean one thing.
Yeah. Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
He's here.
Lotus Files? Are we going to go back to DAT now?
Lotus Files? Oh, wow. Yeah. I was
Lotus
really...
Files. Mm-hmm. Hey, Doc, I came in here just to give you one little factoid here.
Okay.
This morning, I'm driving into work. Right?
Yes.
Stopped at the 7-Eleven. You know what they're selling at the 7-Eleven? Drones.
What?
They're selling a drone at the 7-Eleven, little propellers, the whole thing.
Wow.
I'm sure this is a high-quality item.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet it was.
And was it $39.99?
Right next to the 5-hour energy drink.
Do you pour the 5-hour energy drink into the drone?
Unbelievable.
For power?
Unbelievable.
Are they delivering Slurpees by drone?
Slurpees by drone. They have little, it's in the little box, and there you go, and boom. It's crazy. This is how that's leveled down to everyone's level now.
Everybody's getting drones.
There's a drone for your price. Whatever your price limit is, there's a drone just for you.
It's like the Yugo of drones.
There was a guy in Seattle. Crickets. He was almost arrested. He was taking pictures of the Space Needle.
I saw that last night on the news. Yeah. Almost got arrested.
No, he wasn't arrested. The police just gave him a warning.
Yeah, quit flying drones up here.
Yeah, see, he was an Amazon employee. But the thing is interesting, he was staying in a hotel that had a balcony. So he launched the drone from the balcony.
What a dope.
And then he listen, what a dope. That's something,
I'm sorry, Doc.
That's something I may do.
Well, no, the balcony. The question is, did he get it? Was he an astute enough pilot?
He got it back.
To get it back into his balcony. So what he did, he
flew it over to the Space Needle. He was flying it around the Space Needle, but then he hit the window at one point.
Oh, jeez.
But it didn't break a propeller. He must have had propeller guards on it, like I have.
Right.
So 3 people called 911 who were at the Space Needle saying that there's an alien ship outside the window, and they called the police. So then he flew it back, and he opened up his patio door in the hotel room, and he just flew it right back into the hotel.
Wow. Did he turn himself in?
The police watched where it went.
Oh, very clever.
And about 10 minutes later, knock on the door. They gave him a very stiff warning, and he said, "Okay, I'm."
And a pistol whipping.
He said, "I won't fly this drone anymore."
Never right? Again. Yeah, so. Sure.
Yeah, can you imagine the 2 cops down there going, "Weren't you watching? I thought it was the 13th floor. No, it was the 14th. No, it's 3 over. Jeez, that's crazy, unbelievable."
So this guy works for Amazon, Amazon's, trying to get drones.
Was he doing some product testing?
That's not going to happen.
I don't think
this
so.
Drone stuff's out of control, Doc. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know you're
it's
right.
Out of control.
It is.
I mean, I went to the Air and Space Museum for the first time in a couple of years. They've got the Predator drones now in the Air and Space Museum.
They do?
Yes. Predator drones. They got a couple other drones in there. I was quite amazed by that. I went, wow, that is a big, big drone.
See, this now opens up. I hadn't even thought about this. Mm-hmm. Your device, your drone, has like a 1,400-foot maximum distance from which you can go. So if you're standing on the ground, you could go straight up 1,400 feet, but if you're on the roof of a building now,
you could go even higher.
You can go higher. Well, okay.
Yeah, you could go. You could go higher. That's right.
It's a signal. You're up, and so it's a signal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I'm just paraphrasing what the doc would say.
Exactly. And if you want to go higher, you could probably hack the transmitter and boost the power. Violate.
Not that that would ever happen.
You would never do that.
Violate FCC regulations, which of course, I would never do.
You wouldn't super.
No.
I would never
Chevy?
Violate no. any FCC. Talking on the radio station, I would never violate an FCC regulation.
Never.
No.
I know you, Doc. I know you very well. You'd never do something like that.
That's amazing.
I know.
You can get a drone at 7-Eleven now.
At 7-Eleven. I looked at the box twice to make sure I just wasn't seeing it like it was a toy.
Why? You should have bought it. You could expense it. Just think of the story you could do.
Okay, buddy.
How much was it?
I didn't even look at the price. I was just floored that it was right there.
Go, run now.
Run
like
check
the wind.
Out.
We have 15 minutes. You need to find out.
Well, I'm going to be, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be bringing in the Google Glass. So we'll have it on in the studio.
Oh, so you're going to be a glass hole.
Yeah, that's right. No, I know.
That was his joke. That wasn't mine.
I'm going to bring in somebody from the IT department. I'll bring in a Stratford glass hole. Yeah, and he'll talk about it.
Yeah, they need to come down.
How much do those cost?
$1,500.
I'll bet he expends those.
They're $1,500.
But that's just to photograph everything you're doing all day?
But no, what we're trying to do is see whether we can actually use it for in the classroom, like the teacher could like do culinary demos, or use it for creating content for the online platform.
You still
platform.
Doing that Friday afternoon feast?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on Thursday. Now
it's Thursday.
Don't show up on Friday.
It's on. Yeah.
Don't do Friday.
That's why nobody's ever there.
It's on Thursday. It's on Thursday because
traffic's terrible on Friday.
Yeah. Well, some people only eat
fish on Thursdays.
So get out of here. No. The Catholic kids have to have the fish, and the Protestants have the sloppy
Joe.
That's
right. It's,
I know, that's good.
So if we handle it on Thursday, everybody can have whatever they want.
Sloppy Joe.
Well, that's right. Well, you need a Catholic-only table, which is.
Oh, yeah, that would be. That would go over. That would go over well.
All right, Doc, that was all I just want to say about the 7-Eleven scoop. I don't know, because I know you don't go into 7-Eleven scoop.
Occasionally, I get a Slurpee. I'm waiting for you to get your iPhone 6. I'm waiting for you to walk in with your iPhone 6, Dave.
He does a 20-hour.
I think you're right.
The iPhone 6, is that really happening?
Yeah, it's
just a bigger screen, right?
It's a bigger screen, that's it. But they also have some...
Because they're worried about Samsung, because those Samsung...
Yeah, so they got the iPhone 5 is a 4-inch screen, and then this... So they got two screens, 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch.
I got a mini pad, I don't care.
Yeah,
I bought
I'm
a mini
you.
Pad just last week. I don't care.
I know. I'm with you. That's all I need.
I don't need a phone and an iPad mini.
That's all I need. That's exactly right. I mean, Doc, I see other people walking around with these giant Samsung phones. I'm like, where do you put that?
You remember the Etch a Sketch? It's as big as a stinking Etch a Sketch. I don't need an Etch a Sketch in my pocket. No.
And you're making a call like this.
Yeah, hello.
That's right.
That's stupid. No. Get the mini pad and get the iPhone accessory. That's all.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
You're agreeing with me, Doc?
Yeah.
He's running a fever.
I actually don't like a giant phone.
I don't
because,
either.
Because I just use it for email.
I use earbuds, right. So it doesn't matter to me what the phone. If I need to see something, I get on the mini pad.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly right.
Can I be excused now?
Yeah, you can be excused.
Can I leave class? Can I get a note from the deacon?
But you need to tell us where the 7-Eleven is.
All right, I will. Bye, Doc.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. We will be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Let's talk about another 3D printing project.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors at the University Medical Center in Utrecht. I don't know where Utrecht is.
I think that's Germany.
Germany. Have saved a woman's life by carrying out the first skull transplant using plastic parts built in a 3D printer. The unnamed 22-year-old patient was suffering from a rare condition that caused the inside of her skull to grow extra bone, which squeezed her brain. The new skull was precisely created using 3D printing, which using a customized program. Now, this not only had very great benefits cosmetically, but the patients often have a better brain function as compared with older methods where they just sort of made approximate fits. The surgeons worked with Australian 3D printing firm Anatomics, which use a CAT scan, CT scan, to determine the precise shape of the patient's skull. And then they printed out a copy in acrylic and modified it to remove the unwanted growth on the inside. They took off most of her cranium and then fitted the artificial replacement in a 23-hour operation.
Wow.
There's going to be a lot of this 3D printing stuff used for medical purposes. It's really a great technology.
Mm-hmm.
Office for iPad is finally out. And better late than never. Now, this move, of course, was possible because Office is out, because Ballmer is out. And Ballmer just didn't want to support Microsoft, didn't want to support Apple at all. Now, the software is here 4 years after the release of the first iPad, 6 months after Apple made its own productivity applications free to new iPad owners, and nearly 1.5 years since Microsoft released its own tablet without a touch-optimized version of Office.
Huh.
Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote occupy, in that order, the first four spots in the top charts for free applications in the iTunes store. I haven't downloaded OneNote yet, but I did Excel, PowerPoint, and Word. Now, each of them successfully combines the main functions of Windows of Office for Windows applications with elements that make them feel at home on an iPad. Microsoft ribbon, which is all the features at the top, is in fully intact. But this ribbon, you can touch it, so it feels like a real touch interface.
Hmm.
All the applications, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, they all look and act consistently. All you have to do, as with a Google iOS application, when you sign into one of the Office apps with your Microsoft ID and password, it'll sign you into all of them. Now, each application gives you a few features fewer features in the desktop version, but they have most of the features that you'd want. Word, for example, you can easily change fonts, font sizes, margins, footnotes, alignment, create numbered lists. It's simple to create tables, which is hard to do in some of the other word processing systems. You can insert pictures from your camera roll. They also allow you to track changes. Now, each application offers you a number of templates on creating a document. Now, here's the rub. Okay, the applications are free, but with the free application, you can only read documents. If you want to edit documents, you have to pay.
Ah.
Okay, that's the deal. And if you want to edit documents, you have to basically subscribe to Office 365, which is the online version of Office. And then all your documents are stored in the cloud, either at SkyDrive, or it could be, you know, or some variation of the cloud storage that Microsoft has. Now, the subscription to Office 365 is $5 a month. But that's good for multiple devices. You could have Office 365 on more than one iPad. Hmm. You could have it on your desktop at work. And so it works for multiple devices. And the nice thing is everything is synchronized. You make a change to your document, say, on your iPad, and it uploads it to the cloud. Then you open up Office 365 on your desktop, and the document's already synchronized through the cloud. So it's actually not a bad system. This is demonstration that Microsoft is doubling down on cloud technology. Now, one of the major problems of this, though, is the lack of printing support. Now, these apps will not print through Apple's AirPrint.
Mm-hmm.
They will not print through Google's Cloud Print. If you need to make a hard copy, you've either got to sync it with your OneDrive and then go to your desktop and print it, or you got to email it to yourself.
Sure.
And then print it from an actual desktop. That's probably a problem, and Microsoft should fix that. Now, Microsoft spent a lot of time saying how they would preserve all the formattings. See, one of the big problems I had on my iPad is my CFO would send me all these spreadsheets with tabs, and the numbers application that I have with the Apple application wouldn't display the tabs correctly. So it was very hard for me to look at a complicated spreadsheet on my iPad. Now with Excel, I was just looking at Excel this morning, and I can display tabs without any trouble, which is really quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, Office for iPad. You can download it free. You can read documents. You can read all those tabs on Excel, and you won't have any problem working with that at all. We've talked over the years about domain names that have been reselling. Now, for years and years and years, Do you know what the most expensive domain name was?
It was sex.com, wasn't it?
Sex.com was like the king of the domain name. Mm-hmm. Sex.com like a King Kong of the pricing. And I'm telling you, in recent times, sex.com has been dethroned.
No kidding.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, the number one domain name, which was sold for $35 million in 2007, $35 million.
Where's the drum roll when I need
it? And it was sold by HomeAway. The number one domain name is vacationrentals.com.
Well, in lack of, we don't have the...
Okay, here we go. Vacationrentals.com.
Or just this. That's the best. See, all the other musical instrument I have.
Who would have thought that vacationrentals.com could beat out sex.com? It's just unbelievable.
Well, there's so many things I could say that I'm not going to right now. I'll just let you continue on.
And the number two domain name that went for $30 million in 2012, privatejet.com.
How is this even possible?
I'm thinking somebody is a total idiot. Now, sex.com was recently resold, by the way.
Really?
And it was resold in 2010 for $13 million.
Which is paltry compared
to vacationrentals.com of $35 million. I mean, I'm telling you, sex.com is really going down in stature fast.
Mm-hmm.
Then number three, this probably makes sense, hotels.com.
Mm-hmm.
That was purchased for $11 million in 2001.
But in 2001 dollars, that's a lot of money.
See, the other thing is, you know, well, the two that was really kind of a duo of like the king of the domain name, sex.com and porn.com kind of went together.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns
and
out
so that,
that
brings us to... Well, not quite yet.
No, yeah.
But hotels.com kind of goes with sex and porn. Never mind.
Well, yeah, I guess they sort of go. And then and then fund.com is $9.99 million. That went in 2008. And then the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And the number six one on the list, porn.com, went for $9.5 million.
Right.
And I'm telling you, porn.com and sex.com used to be at the top.
So, I guess our priorities as a nation are being rearranged.
I think this is a good sign that priorities are shifting. Don't you think, Jim? I mean, I think in the beginning the internet was like focused on the wrong thing. Now it's broadening its
like
interest
useful
base.
Stuff like vacations and yeah, vacations. And getting private jets.
Yeah, you need a jet to fly to your vacation house. So the next one after porn.com is FB.com, which, of course, Facebook. That's short for Facebook, and that was bought by Facebook for $8.5 million. Can you imagine the guy that just said, I think I'll just register FB.com. He got $8.5
million. Wow.
Then the next ones on the list is diamond.com, business.com, beer.com,
so beer,
7
porn,
million.
Sex, and hotels all go together.
That's right. Beer.com, $7 million. Slots.com, $5.5 million. Casino.com, $5.5 million. Toys.com, $5.1 million, was bought in 2009 by Toys R Us.
Really?
And this is interesting. Korea.com. Would you think Korea.com would be that hot? Korea.com was bought for $5 million in 2000. So there you go. The 15 most expensive domain names in the system. Okay. The selfiest cities in the world. So Time has ranked them. Time magazine has gone to do some weighty things in this time, and this is this world, and this is one of the other things. What they did, they actually... built a database of more than 400,000 Instagram photos, which were tagged selfies. Now, these selfies actually include geographic coordinates. They've got all the GPS data. You can tell within 10 feet of where somebody took the picture, even if it's anonymous. So they took all the geographic coordinates from these Instagram photos, and then they mapped them into a map, and they put them into cities. And they ended up ranking 459 cities to determine which were the selfiest places on Earth. The number one city... Makati City, Philippines. Who would have thought that?
I never
258 selfies per 100,000 people. The number two city, Manhattan, New York.
No kidding.
202 selfies per 100,000 people. The number three city, Miami, Florida. I could have predicted that.
Sure.
155 selfies per 100,000 people. Anaheim and Santa Ana, California, number four, 147 selfies per 100,000 people. Then we go all the way, and then we leave the U.S. We go to Malaysia. We go. Tel Aviv is number six. Milan, Italy is number eight. Georgetown, Malaysia is number nine. We go down all the way. Florence, Italy is number 22. And Washington, D.C., number 25 in the selfiest cities, sending out 66 selfies per 100,000 people.
Wow.
Probably. How many senators do we have?
More than that.
Yeah, so it's
it's two per state last I checked.
Two per state, that's right. Who made the progress bar? Everybody wants to know about that. Haven't you ever wondered? You know, you got that little thermometer turned on its side, and it sort of goes across there. And so at 1985, in a 1985 conference in the field of human-computer interfaces, a graduate student by the name of Brad A. Myers, presented a paper on the importance of what he called percent done progress indicators. He had the idea that they would be useful and important, and they felt that they weren't used enough. Now Brad Myers is now on the faculty at Carnegie Mellon University. Now, he told his colleagues at the practice bars made the computer users less anxious and they're more efficient. It could help them relax because, you see, back in those days, computers were slow. They would hang up a lot. And so you're sitting there waiting, and then you wonder, has the computer locked up? Should I reboot it? What should I do? And you get very anxious. But if that little progress bar is moving, you say, okay, so progress is going on. And it allowed users to relax. So it's all about how the user feels while he's waiting.
Ah.
So to prove his point, and actually they did research, and then users felt that it went faster when they had a progress bar because they had something to look at. Now, to prove his point, Myers asked 48 fellow students to run searches on a computer database with and without a progress bar. Now, for his progress bar, he took a capsule and he filled it from left to right. It looked like a giant thermometer, like they'd been using for the charity drives. You've seen these charity drives
and it
blows out the top.
Yeah, right.
So he just took a charity drive thermometer and turned it on its side. And he let them rate the experience, and 86% of them said they liked the progress bars. And that rest is history. They've become ubiquitous.
They're everywhere.
So that kind of an interesting thing, and so it was a good idea. Back, a lot of stuff for computers was invented in the mid-80s because that's when things were being developed. Talk about the buttonless mouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was created accidentally. Sometimes the biggest innovations and most important discoveries don't come as a result of some creative minds putting together, making a single progress.
You mean they're mistakes?
They just happen by chance, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what happened when they created the buttonless mouse. Abraham Farrakh, who was a former Apple senior mechanical engineer in the product design group, explained the events that led up to this design. It all started in 1999. Now, they'd made six great form models to show Steve, because Steve liked to feel. You know, he was like a touchy-feely kind of guy. So they made six models of a mouse, different shapes, different lanes, different curviness, to show Steve. And they were completely done. They had all of the lines for the buttons cut. They sort of cut in lines to show where the buttons would be. They were all colors were just right. And then at the 11th hour, one of the engineers said, wait a minute here. I got another idea for making a curved mouse. So they threw it together. But the problem was there wasn't quite enough time. They didn't have enough time to finish it, you know, to cut the little grooves where the buttons would be. And so it just wasn't finished. So Farrakh and his crew, they really weren't proud of this creation. They said it just looked like a gray blob. So they sort of hid it in the box. Then Steve showed up. And Steve looked around at the lineup, and he saw this box with this gray blob. And he pulled out the blob. And Steve looked at that. He says, that's genius! We don't want any buttons! Someone in the room said, that's right, Steve.
No buttons at all. And the rest is history.
There you go. That's pretty funny.
It's Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Savioke has announced that it is ready to start trialing a service for robots for hotels. These are going to be robots that go around and deliver things in a hotel. Mm-hmm. It's called Savvy One. Like the Savvy One robot.
Drone butlers.
Can autonomously deliver items to the guest in a hotel. So it's like, oh, I need a toothbrush. So you call down to the front desk. They put a toothbrush in Savvy One, and it comes right to your door. Now, and then it can't really knock because it doesn't have arms.
Well, there's that.
So it goes, it makes this funny noise.
Well,
And you hear a funny noise and you open up the door.
Here's a better idea. Why when it gets to your room, it should just call your phone, hotel phone. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
You know, maybe because it does have Wi-Fi connection. Maybe that's how it does connect. Because I was watching the video and it didn't knock on the door. I think they should just call the hotel room. Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
And maybe there's a recording. Your item is at the door.
I think you're right.
Room service is at the door.
It's got kind of a neat little voice. Now, Savvy One's sensors, it includes a depth camera, sonar, laser range finders. It's being trialed in the Aloft Hotel at Cupertino, California. Now, when it finds the way to the room autonomously, then you open up the door, it then gives you an instruction as to how to retrieve the requested item. Now, the company has spent 7 months researching this and trying to understand the needs of end users like hotel staff and guests. They used an agile development technique. This is where you just launch something, a whole series of trials of samples very quickly, and they improve them. So over a five-month period, they released a new prototype every 5 months, every 1 month. Over 5 months, they released a new prototype every month, and they would hit a milestone every 2 weeks, so that by the fifth month, they had a prototype that they could show to customers. Now, the prototype... Each prototype would focus on some element of the robot's design, like one might be ergonomic loading and unloading of the robot. One might be an empathetic experience for the user. And the voice is very empathetic that came up with. Another one would be ensuring that the interaction was quick and easy for staff and fun for guests. Now, the first time Savvy One goes to a hotel, it travels around the building autonomously and maps it. I don't know how it pushes. It's going to have to be able to push the hotel buttons or the elevator buttons. And I just didn't
see. Maybe somebody takes it to the elevator.
No. It's got to be able to work the elevator on its own. There's some way that it pushes the hotel button. I don't know. I didn't see a hand to do that. But it can autonomously go to any room in the hotel. It maps the entire hotel. Then after it's done that mapping, the staff then goes to the map and they program in the room numbers on the map because it can't really read the room numbers.
Sure.
I guess that would be the more advanced. It would read the room numbers.
It operates like a drone, but it
yeah,
walks.
And so they program in the room numbers, and so and it uses these various sensors to get around. It's able to communicate with elevators via Wi-Fi.
Ah,
there's
okay.
the answer.
All we had to do was read ahead.
Yeah, communicates with elevators via Wi-Fi. Probably they use Wi-Fi to make a phone. I think you solved this knocking problem, Jim. They call the room with the Wi-Fi connection.
Where's my check?
Yeah, I think you should join this team, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You are really a robot developer. Now the Savvy One is based on the robot operating system ROS, which is overseen by the Open Source Robotics Foundation. So it's based on open source code. It's about 3 feet tall, weighs less than 100 pounds. It can carry 2 cubic feet of whatever you want to send to it, and it travels around in walking space. And I've got a link to a YouTube video, and it is just really kind of fun to watch it come up there and make a delivery.
Here's my idea for the next generation.
Let me hear that.
So suppose you get maybe 4 or 5 calls at the same time. Somebody wants a toothbrush, somebody wants a mouthwash, whatever. So this little robot has a series of little openings in it, like a vending machine.
Okay, yeah.
You put the device in there, and it goes and just makes a whole trip, makes 4 or 5 trips all at once. And, you see your item, and when you get there, it opens up it allows access to the appropriate door.
That, Jim, is
Don't
Robot
like that?
Butler version 2.0.
Isn't that
I
great?
Think you should be on the
I
team.
I think I should.
You
I found
should
my
be
calling.
On the team, Jim. Listen, I'm going to give you the Savvio website address, and you may want to, to apply to be on their team.
I think I shall.
That is
I may
very
not be
good
seeing you anymore.
I know. That is exactly what is going on there.
Okay. We got about a minute and a half or so.
Okay, then we have time for just this last thing that was very interesting. A mother developed an app. Mothers have this feeling that their kids ignore them.
Yeah.
And, they're waiting for their son or daughter to call them. They're out at a party, and they say, "Oh, yeah, we'll call." And the son and daughter just says, "Okay, yeah, I couldn't call you. I forgot." And so this mom developed an app. Now, her name is Sharon Sandiford. She just got fed up with a capital F with her unresponsive kids. And she developed a solution, which is called, it's an app that they load onto the phone called Ignore No More. Now, the app allows parents to remotely lock their kids' phone.
Oh, wow.
And so once their phone is locked, they can't text, they can't play games, they can't call their friends. They can only do one thing.
And that's text mom.
Call their mom. They call their mom, and mom gives them the password to unlock their phone.
That's pretty funny. That's very funny.
I checked immediately. It's not on the iPhone yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, so it must have been released for the Android. So moms, Ignore No More is
your
key to never being ignored.
Excellent.
Oh, I tell you, the show just went by so fast. I'll tell you, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'd also like you to take a look at our programs. I mean, we've got programs that, get you right into careers that you enjoy, health science, computers, culinary, hospitality, business, accounting, a wide range of things. And then we teach you not just what it takes to get a job, but how to be happy, how to get a promotion. And let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Which is, of course, heard every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. You can find us on the web at techtalkonline.com and on federalnewsradio.com. Learn about our sponsors by going to stratford.edu. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT-FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.